Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast, where we look at the intersection of creativity and student learning. I'm John Spencer, former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I'm passionate about seeing classrooms become bastions of creativity and wonder, and seeing students embrace this maker mindset. And so that's actually what we're doing right now, is we're looking at this idea of redefining the classroom space, and in particular, having maker spaces. And one of the things I really believe is that every classroom should be a maker space, and that every school should have maker spaces. We're gonna get into what that looks like a little bit in this particular episode, as well as in the past ones, we've kind of looked into it, and we're going to do the same thing in some of the upcoming future episodes as well. But on that topic, quick little thing I want to tell you about, if you're interested. If you go to bit.ly, so bit.ly/makerspacecourse, you will notice that there's a course that I created that's all about designing a makerspace in a week. I spent a lot of time and energy just wasting time looking at the wrong stuff, being afraid, hoping for the perfect technology, wondering whether it fit my subject, all that kind of stuff for the longest time, for about a year and a half to 2 years before I ever designed my own makerspace. And so my goal with this course was to save you some of that time, and it is precious, that the time that you get. So to make a blueprint, a roadmap, something that you could do to create a makerspace in a week. So if you're interested, like I said, it's there's a link to it on this particular, on the show notes to this episode. You can also find it again at bit.ly/makerspacecourse. And if you use the coupon code Spencer, you get $26 off. So it goes from $125 down to $99. So with that in mind, though, I want to dive straight into this topic because, like I said, it's something I'm really interested in. I think we could have a lot of fun with it. So it's this idea of the seven myths that are keeping teachers from designing makerspaces. And these are myths that in many ways I was caught in myself, and they're also myths that a lot of other people that I've noticed have kind of bought into as well. So I want to start with my maker story. I first heard of makerspaces over a decade. It was part of the do-it-yourself culture, and I found it intriguing. I remember Make Magazine had just come out, Dale Daugherty or Daughtry, I don't know how you say his name, and I was really intrigued by it. It was not long after that that I visited a few places where people were doing these high-tech fabrication, and I wondered if I could somehow tie that into our economics unit where students were developing products. And at the time, I was a middle school social studies teacher. I later on moved to all subjects and then to STEM and journalism, which kind of a fun combo right there, right? But I was new and I was young and I got really, really frustrated. I had a vision for this like cool classroom makerspace, but I simply couldn't pull it off. There were too many moving pieces that I simply couldn't figure out. Besides, I didn't have the money or the resources, and I didn't know enough about grant writing to make this idea a reality. I also didn't have all the skills to teach students about high-tech prototyping. So even if we got the tech, I wasn't sure that my tech skills, on at least on the fabrication side, were, you know, up to snuff. So I kept it in a private dream space where I wouldn't have to do the real work of turning it into a reality. But then something happened. I met a teacher named Javi who always asked, why not? When we didn't have enough computers, he said, let's figure out how to hack old computers and make them work. And so we did. We learned Linux and over the summer and transformed that space into something with real machines that could do coding and stuff. And it wasn't perfect, but kids could write blog posts. They could collaborate. And at the time, back then, that was kind of a big deal. When I asked, when I said to him, I remember, yeah, I wish we had standing desks. And I wanted those cool, like flexible furniture. And Javi responded with, where would you stand if the chairs were all gone? let's start there. And from there, I turned our heavy bookshelves into standing centers. I created boxes at some of the tables, and suddenly we had places where kids could stand. Javi approached things like a hacker, he still does, turning all those limitations into opportunities to innovate. Over the next 3 years, I slowly transformed my space into a makerspace. It never felt like a real makerspace, though. I mean, we didn't have a 3D printer. We didn't have the fanciest gadgets. But that was just one of the many myths that I can't say the word myths. Myths. There we go. I always want to say like myths really slow or miss, but myths, it's a hard word to say. And these were the myths that I had bought into around makerspaces. So I want to share these myths one at a time. Dang, I'm going to keep saying that word, myths. Okay. Myth number one, it's about STEM or it's about STEAM. That was the big myth I had believed in. Too often we associate makerspaces with STEM classes. People think about coding or robotics or 3D prototyping, but I'd argue that we need a bigger definition of making. When students create blogs and podcasts, documentaries, when they do these things, they're exercising a maker mindset. In fact, makerspaces can be the perfect context for informational writing or authentic research. The truth is that a makerspace can exist in any subject with any space. If a student is creating, designing, building, problem solving, you get the idea. Then the space can be a makerspace. That's the idea. It's not the space that makes it special. It's the making that makes it special. I used to teach photojournalism and STEM. Like I said, we would use the same makerspace styled classroom with the documentaries and blogging and then with the engineering problems and coding projects. And these subjects were on opposite ends of the spectrum, right? I mean, being a journalist and being an engineer, typically we don't think of those things being one and the same. But these subjects were so different, and yet they were so similar in terms of the common needs for flexible spacing and ease of movement and collaboration and creativity. Similarly, when I taught self-contained, I expected to treat the class as a makerspace when we were doing STEM-related activities. But I soon found the overlap between the standards in STEM and the language arts standards that we had in our humanities group. The point is, when we did our Shark Tank style projects, or when kids were doing research, or any of those things, they were engaged in this maker process, and they needed a maker space. So what I'm saying is this, and maybe I'm not explaining it great, I admit this. As long as there's creativity, as long as there's design, as long as there's you have kids who are engaged in a hands-on making process, then I guarantee you will need a maker space. The question is just what that maker space should look like. And a lot of this became interdisciplinary. When we did our Shark Tank style projects, I viewed it as an economics project, something out of social studies, right? But then I realized that I was having kids do all of these language arts standards. And then I also realized that along the way, they were also doing math standards as they kept a budget. And then what they were designing often connected to science. And next thing I knew, I was teaching every single subject. So that's another idea. Makerspaces are inherently interdisciplinary. All right, so myth number two, it has to be high tech. This is something I hear all the time. But I don't believe a makerspace has to be 100% high tech. For example, kids can prototype with a 3D printer, and that's awesome. But sometimes hands-on learning should involve our own two hands. Sometimes the best choice is duct tape or cardboard. I tend to think of a makerspace as having three different types of making. The first is the high tech. We get it. This is what happens when kids are doing circuitry or computers, think, you know, Raspberry Pi or Arduino, when they're doing coding, robotics, green screen, studio area. And that's typically what people think of when they hear the word makerspace. And then there's a layer that's different. It's the low-tech layer. This could be cardboard prototyping. It could be sketchnoting, ideating simple machines with levers and pulleys and things like that. It could be toy hacking. It could be crocheting, right? But then there's this space in between those two spaces. And I call it vintage innovation. This is where you mash up the high-tech and low-tech all together. Here, kids might do whiteboard videos that combine sketchnoting and video making. They might use low-tech items to build something quirky and fun with Raspberry Pi or Arduino. And although it's totally vintage, it's also totally innovative. Myth number three is that it has to be expensive. Years ago, I had this mental picture of what a makerspace was supposed to be. I spent forever chasing this dream of the perfect makerspace. And I was so focused on the funding issues. How would I pay for it? I thought up ways that we could do online campaigns, we could do grants, we could, you know, do car washes. I was like, it would take a lot of car washes, but we're going to knock this thing out. I researched high-tech supplies and created spreadsheets, and I was obsessed with the stuff. But I became so obsessed with the stuff that I missed a deeper reality. It's about the maker mindset. Meanwhile, my kids were just making more and more stuff. We transformed our old computers into Linux machines and learned about coding. We painted murals, we did cardboard prototyping, and I never felt comfortable calling it a makerspace because it wasn't a, quote, real makerspace. It didn't look impressive. But eventually I learned that some of the best items in a makerspace are cheap. I could create a green screen studio and kids could use their own devices to record. We could do whiteboard videos. We could use lots and lots of cardboard. And then in the meantime, each year, newer, less expensive options came out. And now I look at it and we have things like Raspberry Pi and Arduino, and these things cost, you know, $35 a pop. They've gotten so stinking cheap for what's essentially a full computer. Myth number four is it's completely unstructured. The word makerspace sometimes will, you know, conjure up images of open, rapid-fire learning. But a makerspace can be a loosely or tightly structured process. For example, when we use design thinking, we tend to follow a tighter process, but when we engage in rapid prototyping, the structure is often loose. On my blog post, I have this thing going from the left to the right, from loosely structured to tightly structured, and then you also have from short-term to at the bottom to long-term at the top. So imagine two different axes. And I realize that it's an incomplete chart, but the thing is, you know, divergent thinking challenges or rapid prototyping, they both tend to be loosely structured and short-term. Maker challenges are short-term, but they're tightly structured. But design thinking is both long-term and tightly structured, and Genius Hour is loosely structured and long-term. So the point is, if you check it out, it makes a lot more sense than what I'm describing, but that's the idea. I realize that, you know, I'm probably missing pieces as I describe it, but I bring it up because there are a lot of pedagogical models you can use in a makerspace. And don't be pigeonholed into doing something that you think everyone is supposed to do, because that's not what this is all about. Ultimately, what makes a makerspace awesome is the making. And sometimes this is more structured, sometimes it's less structured. But always, it's amazing because kids are engaged in creative work. Myth number five is that it's fluff. Makerspaces aren't an escape from learning. They're not bonus activities that fill up extra time. They exist because making is a vital thing. It's part of what we need for life on Earth. And I believe that creative thinking is as vital as math or reading or writing. There's power in problem solving and experimenting and taking things from questions to ideas to real products that you launch to the world. Something happens in students when they define themselves as makers and innovators and inventors and creators and builders and tinkers and all of that. When kids embrace this maker mindset, they learn to think divergently. They learn to solve problems by connecting seemingly disconnected ideas. They learn to take creative risks and try new things. They learn to embrace iterative thinking as they move through the creative process. The point is, these things are really, really important. They develop grit, not a no-nonsense, compliance-driven, we-make-no-excuses kind of grit, but that hands are dirty, learning is messy kind of grit, that I refuse to give up because I love what I'm doing. It's the byproduct of being so excited about the work that you are trying to do, that you push through the frustration and finish your design. Myth number six is that the space doesn't matter. I used to get really frustrated when people would focus on the space and not the learning. I'd say things like, it's about the making and not the space, or it's not about the stuff, it's about the mindset, right? I would get so frustrated when people would visit a makerspace and they'd talk about the fancy furniture or the 3D printer or the robotics set or whatever else they would talk about. But here's the thing. The space still matters a lot, partly because a space is more than simply a collection of items. My kitchen, where I am right now, is more than an assortment of beaters and spatulas and pots and pans. It's a family hub where we gravitate toward and hang out and eat. It's where community happens. A home is more than a frame and some drywall. A museum is more than a holding spot for painted boxes. A classroom is more than an assortment of desks and books. We infuse these spaces with meaning and purpose when we interact in community. And the physical design and layout matter here. We could have school desks in our kitchen, and it would be crowded and crappy and uncomfortable, and we probably wouldn't have the same community that we have as a family as we do when we meet around a table. Okay, the same thing is true of makerspaces. You infuse those spaces with meaning and purpose in a trusted community that is your classroom. So the case of makerspaces. You might say, making can happen anywhere, right? Absolutely. But think about it this way. Many kids can buy books on Amazon. They can access books at home in some cases. But there's something powerful about entering a library and falling in love with reading. Here, the librarian is a guide that takes them to an amazing new world. A great library inspires kids to think and dream and wonder. You can have a drama class anywhere, but there's something powerful that happens when kids get to be up on stage in an auditorium. And the same is true of a makerspace. It's an entirely new world of building and tinkering and designing. And kids leave this space, and they don't say, well, I can only make things in the makerspace, can't wait to be there. No. They get inspired. They turn around and they take this mindset that they developed in the makerspace, and they take it home, and they start building, and they start tinkering, and they start making and designing on their own for fun. And that, when you experience that, you realize that making is magic. Myth number seven. You have to be an expert in maker-related activities. Here's the thing. You don't have to know how to do everything in a makerspace. In fact, you can share your own learning process with your class. They get the chance to see your struggle and take creative risks. And when this happens, you're modeling creative courage, but you're also empowering them to own their own learning. And I love this idea of learning Scratch or circuitry or building things with cardboard and duct tape, even if you suck at them. But you learn it with your students. You're not just a guide on the side. You are a guide on the ride, on this epic journey towards something awesome. So if this interests you at all, I want to encourage you to check out a webinar that I've done on this subject. And there's also a free Makerspace supply list. So if you don't even know where to start, check it out. So go to this blog. You can check out the webinar. It's pre-recorded, so you can access it at any time. And it just covers some of these key ideas here. With that in mind, I just want to wish you a wonderful day. And I want to encourage you to go out and make something awesome. Hey, thanks for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast at all, would you do two things? Would you tell someone about it? And would you leave a review on iTunes? That would mean the world to me.